fabulous. I've adored him and his programmes and his enthusiasm for wildlife. Seems more. But if I was going to add my third one to that, it would be the now sadly just lost Dame Maggie Smith.
Oh, really?
Fabulous woman. I mean, didn't she just make you laugh, make you cry? Best actress.
I should say that Sir Winston Churchill came in fourth place and Freddie Mercury, number five,
good
which
call.
I'm slightly surprised by. Must
oh, best music. Don't you sing out loud in your car when he's playing?
Meatloaf.
Oh,
me too.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
That's out of hell live album.
Oh,
yeah. Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
15 minutes of absolute joy.
I'm an ABBA girl every day.
Yeah, well, me too, but yeah. Anyway. Scarlett.
I think I a bit of a panic answer because I was trying to think. But I don't actually watch really TV or films, but I do, I'm obsessed with the darts and have been for years, and I love it, and I think it's actually a great cultural institution that we have here.
So did you say darts?
I did say darts. I told you I panicked a bit. Okay. It's a bit idiosyncratic, but the darts commentator, Wayne Waddell, there's Sid Waddell before him, who's sadly dead because he was absolutely incredible. But Wayne Waddell, I just, every time I listen to him, I feel sort of comforted and at home and sort of deeply British.
Love that.
I'm profoundly shocked by that.
Oh, I thought you were going to go for Phil the Power Taylor, which would have been a very, very good answer.
No, but he's a grumpy sort of, you don't want to go for Phil the Power Taylor. There are so many nicer ones, even though he is iconic.
I was born and brought up in Portsmouth, so I used to enjoy nothing more than going around HMS Victory, so I would choose Nelson.
Oh, don't you love that as a patriotic ending to your programme?
As a patriotic Norfolk person. Yes, excellent.
We can go back to the conference singing the national anthem now.
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Or Royal Britannia.
You see, we could sing British. Jerusalem now, if we had a mind to. Now, on tomorrow's panel, we have the former Tory Middle East Minister, Alastair Burt, the journalist and author, Rachel Shabby, the political strategist, Joe Tanner, plus a representative from the Lib Dems, as yet unnamed. So, don't know what to make of that. Anyway, coming up, thank you very much indeed, all three of you, for being on Cross Question today. Coming up in the next hour, Tom Lockyer, he is the captain of Luton Town Football Club. In December last year, he suffered a heart attack while playing for Luton Town at home. He was effectively clinically dead for 2.5 minutes, but was resuscitated through CPR and has made a recovery. And he's part of a British Heart Foundation campaign to increase the number of defibrillators across the country and to train people how to do CPR. Now, I don't know about you, but I've seen it happen on television, but I wouldn't really be confident being able to do it myself. It takes less than 10 minutes online. We want to know, have you ever experienced CPR? And how has a heart attack affected you and your family?
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the UK's Foreign Secretary has repeated calls for Britons in Lebanon to leave immediately. He's been speaking as a US official says the current positioning of Israeli troops suggests an IDF ground offensive there could be imminent. Lebanese media is reporting heavy artillery fire in border areas. The Foreign Secretary David Lammy has been talking to his US counterpart this evening.
We've both seen the reports in the media about a next phase for Israel in Lebanon. We both agreed the position that we had at the UN last week, that the best way forward is an immediate ceasefire and to get back to a political solution.
Anne-Marie Trevelyan was a Minister of State in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. In the last hour, she's been telling LBC Israel is still defending its right to exist.
There are basic international rule of law, an order that says in order to try and live peacefully together on this planet, these are the frameworks around which we will all try and live. And when someone breaches that, a terrorist group like Hamas or Hezbollah, if we don't stand together in full voice and using the tools that we have to support the country defending itself, we are saying we don't care.
Traditional steelmaking has come to an end in South Wales after more than 100 years. The last furnace at Tata Steel in Port Talbot is closing. With the loss of thousands of jobs, it's being replaced with a more environmentally friendly electric version. But Alan Davies, the National Officer for Steel at the Community Union, has told LBC Tata is guilty of double standards.
It's all right for them to bring in steel from blast furnace-made plants from India and Holland and bring it over here, so it's still not green steel when it comes over here, but they shut our plants down. It's not good. It's a bitter pill to swallow.
And it's being claimed teenagers in the UK have some of the highest rates of acne in the world. Just over 14% of adolescents have been diagnosed with the skin condition in this country, but the British Association of Dermatologists believes it could be closer to 95%. In the city, the FTSE 100 closed down for the day, 50 points at 82.70. The pound will buy $1.33 and €1.19. LBC weather staying wet and windy in the east of England overnight, drier with clearer spells elsewhere though, and a low of 3 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
It is 5 minutes past nine on LBC. We're going to turn away from politics and international affairs and military conflicts for the next hour and turn to, I think, a really important subject. And it's to do with CPR, heart attacks, cardiac arrests, and your experience of those things. Now, I think many people are like me, particularly when you get to my ripe old age, you sort of think, well, I'm more likely to have a heart attack now than I would have been 20 years ago. And given all of my health woes over the past 2 years, you think, well, is that the next thing I'm going to have to contend with? And your survivability in terms of a heart attack rather depends on the circumstances in which it happens. Now, if you're a footballer, I guess the place that you want to, if you're going to have a heart attack, the best place to have it is on the pitch or at the training ground, because there will be medical professionals there to help you. And we've seen over the past few years, several footballers go through this. Fabrice Moamba, the Bolton player, I mean, what was that, about 10 years ago? And I think everybody was really moved by his experience, because he was clinically dead for quite a long time and recovered to live, I think, a perfectly normal life. He couldn't play football again. Christian Eriksen, the Danish footballer who now plays for Manchester United, he suffered a heart attack on the pitch, I think was it during the World Cup? And he's recovered and has obviously resumed his career. And then in December last year, Tom Lockyer, the Luton Town captain, he was playing in their Premier League match against Bournemouth when he suffered a cardiac arrest. And he was, again, I think, clinically dead for a couple of minutes. We're going to be talking to him in just a second. And it's quite something to think that you can be effectively dead for that long and then be brought back through CPR. So the British Heart Foundation have launched a campaign called Every Minute Matters, because, of course, the longer you are effectively brain dead, the less likely it is that you will either have a full recovery or even a partial recovery. So they've launched this campaign, which is effectively trying to persuade people to learn how to do CPR. And I wonder what percentage of the people listening to this programme right now, i.e. you, would know what to do. And we've seen it on Casualty, we've seen it on all these medical dramas about sort of the pumping someone's chest, but is there a right way to do it? Is there a wrong way to do it? Do you have to have formal training? So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about I want you to ring in if you are fully CPR trained. I want to know if you've been in a situation where you've had to administer CPR. Also want to know if you have been a victim of a heart attack. And what happened, and I mean, obviously, you've lived to tell the tale because you'll be talking to me. But I think, again, it sort of helps other people to hear from people who've been through this kind of experience. My sister used to work at a leisure centre, and she had to conduct CPR on several occasions. And it's quite a traumatic thing to do. I remember her telling me all about it. And it's particularly with squash players who maybe... I mean, I stopped playing squash when I was, I think, 33, because I kept hearing all of these stories about people having heart attacks on the squash court. And I thought, well, I'm not going to be another one of them. I love playing squash. I was actually, believe it or not, given my size, quite good at it. So it's absolutely fascinating to talk to Tom Lockyer, as I did at the end of last week. And he told me what he remembers of that day 10 months ago.
I remember starting the game well, scoring a good goal against Bournemouth. Not me personally, but the team. Bournemouth came back on top. They scored a goal. And then just jogging up to the halfway line after the VAR check and feeling incredibly lightheaded. And then waking up on the floor, found out now it's two minutes 42 later. And seeing paramedics and the club doc and physios bent over me and really in sort of panic mode or go mode, I call it. And I couldn't move, couldn't speak. And I was just looking up at them, like trying to make sense of what was going on. They kept saying, "Can you hear me? Can you hear me?" And I'm in my head, I'm trying to respond and nothing's coming out. I can still feel everything that's going on. So I can feel like a drip going into my arm and just wanted to like move and say something. And then felt like an eternity. Eventually I could move. And then as soon as I could, I was like, what's happened? What's going on? And that's when reality set in.
And presumably, I mean, you've relived that moment over and over again. And one of the things I imagine that goes through your mind is if that hadn't happened on a football pitch and you're just been, I don't know, taking the dog for a walk or something, you were so lucky that there were people there who were able to do CPR.
So, so lucky. Yeah, and I'm one of the fortunate ones, and that's why, you know, this campaign with the British Heart Foundation and Sky Bet means so much to me. It's proof that it works, you know, because I'm here today. And the sad reality is 30,000 people each year in the UK will have a cardiac arrest, and if that's out of hospital, less than 1 in 10 will survive. And that's purely because one, a lack of defibrillators in the local community, and two, not enough people knowing CPR to keep that person alive until a defib gets there to save their life.
And we all see CPR being carried out in TV dramas, and I guess you sort of think that you know what you might have to do, but it's not quite as simple as that, is it?
No, and look, no one knows how you're going to react in this situation, especially if it's a loved one or someone you know. To see someone drop dead down in front of you, and that's what's happened. They're either dying or dead in front of you, and nothing you can do then can make it any worse. 23% of a football fan studied thought that by doing CPR they could make things worse, but that's just simply not the case. The lack of CPR training means that, you know, people don't step up in this situation. And I always feel if you know what to do in this situation, you're more likely to step up and become a hero, because every minute that passes after a cardiac arrest, your chances of surviving decrease by 10%.
Now, this campaign, I know it aims to encourage 270,000 people to learn CPR. I think 90,000 have already gone through the course. That's, of course, the capacity of Wembley Stadium. But in the compared to the wider population, that's not enough, is it?
No, it's not. It's a big target. We wanted 3 Wembley stadiums, and we've filled one already full of new CPR learners. But when you think that 30,000 people each year in the UK alone will have a cardiac arrest, them numbers just ain't good enough. Of course, we're going to save lives just from that alone, but we want to save as many people as possible. And I think the really good thing about this campaign is, you know, we're incredibly fortunate that Sky Bet have got behind it, obviously sponsored at EFL, and they've pledged 3 million over the next 3 years to the British Heart Foundation for incredible research, for defibrillators in the local community, and for raising awareness of CPR. So we're not here for this campaign asking for your donations, asking for your money. All we're doing is asking for 15 minutes of your time to become a lifesaver, to potentially save someone's life. And look, we hope you never, ever have to use it. But should you do, we know that by 15 minutes, you could potentially save someone's life. And it's free to do. All you have to do is go on the British Heart Foundation website, search the Reviver tool, and on there, it will take you through the steps to become a lifesaver in just 15 minutes for free.
And that's Reviver, R-E-V-I-V-R. So you don't actually even have to go somewhere to be trained. You can actually learn it online.
Yeah, and I think that's a misconception with a lot of people. Yeah, I think there was 23% of the football fans studied thought that learning CPR is too complicated, and it's just not the case. You can learn it for free from home. All you need is your phone and a pillow, and you can become a lifesaver. And look, if there's people listening now, why not make some fun of it? You know, if you've got kids, teach it to the kids as well. You know, do it as a family event. You don't have to just do it on your own. You know, you can kill some time with it if you want to, while teaching everyone these incredible life skills.
But just go to the British Heart Foundation website, search for the Reviver tool, and 15 minutes, that's all it takes. Now, let's finish off with a bit more about you, because this happened, well, less than a year ago. How's your recovery gone?
Yeah, it's going well. I've done 8 months on now, I think it is, or something like that. So, yeah, it's been, it's not the 8 months I had planned, but, you know, it's one that, you know, going to define me as a person. And I thought, you know, how do I turn this negative into a positive? And doing work like this really does, it makes me thankful that I'm here to be promoting these messages. So, it's a long old road again still. Obviously, I'd love to get back on a football pitch, but, you know, as long as it can be done safely, then I'm all for it. But, you know, at any stage, the docs could turn around to me and say, look, it's not something that's possible. And I'll be at peace with that. You know, at least I'll have given it a go and see where I can get to. So, I'm doing well, thank you. Obviously, I'd love to get back on a football pitch, but I mean, for the minute, I'm enjoying promoting this campaign.
Well, if you do, and obviously, I really hope you do, because I know what that would mean to you. But if you do, you would just get the most giant roar ever, wouldn't you, from the crowd, from both sides are in the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Look, I've not even thought about it at the minute because it just seems so far away, but. Yeah. Oh, I'd love to play at least one more game with my daughter watching would be incredible. She'd probably fall asleep or something, or daddy, why you keep kicking it in the stand? But it would be really nice. That's so far along down the road yet. It's not something that, you know, I've got my hopes set onto or anything like that.
And final question, how have Luton Town been? Because sometimes when a player has a normal injury, I mean, I've read lots of football autobiographies, and you sort of almost become the forgotten man. But I mean, because your situation is so different, I'd hope that you've got massive support both from the club and your teammates.
Yeah, of course. It was hard last year watching the lads. You know, when I thought, oh, you know, if I was out there, I could have made a difference to what was going on the pitch. But you know, they've been amazing with me. The lads, you know, always welcome me, and Rob Edwards. You know, I think you can see just how emotional a guy he is, and how much that his players mean to him. By a few interviews he's done with me, and you know, he said to me at the end of last season, come and go in the club as you please. Like, if you want to come in, if you need to stay away for whatever reason, you know, there's no pressure on you to do whatever, do what works for you. So that was really nice. Tried to be around it a little bit towards the back end of the season to try and help that. But it wasn't meant to be. But obviously this season we're looking upwards, a little slow start, but on the back of the cardiac arrest, I mean, I see defibrillators all around the training ground now, which is amazing. I'm lucky that, you know, I've got my own one built in, so I'll never have to use one of them, but they're there, and the, you know, like I said earlier, the sad reality is that they will save someone else's life at some point. And the more of them around the place, the better. I know all the Luton Town staff are doing CPR training. They're due a refresher course in the next coming weeks. So the club has been amazing. Heart health is a big priority of theirs now. So I think Luton Town is probably one of the safest football clubs in terms of cardiac arrests available at the minute.
Well, the campaign's called Every Minute Matters. Google it if you want to find out more, and do take the free training on the online tool. Thomas, thanks so much for joining us and telling us about the campaign.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And that was Tom Lockyer there. I spoke to him late last week. Now, it's quite salutary to think that 3,000 people will have a cardiac arrest this year, and only 10% of those will survive because not enough people know how to do CPR. I mean, that's one of the reasons. There may well be others. So we'll come to your calls in a moment. Have you ever had your life saved by CPR? Have you ever administered it? And what effect has a heart attack had on your life? 0345 6060 973. You're listening to Ian Dale on LBC. It's 20 past nine.
This is LBC.
The Red Cross is here to deliver essentials to people who have lost everything in Ukraine.
We are here to support families enduring the food crisis in Somalia.
We're here to shelter earthquake survivors in Turkey and Syria.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
The plant near the reception desk at Axel's Autocare is loving life. Because since Axel started taking card payments with Barclaycard, he's got the money in his account the next day, with no hidden fees. So he spends less time waiting and more time watering. What's good for small business is good for everyone. Barclaycard Payments.
Settlement terms may vary. To receive next day settlement, transactions need to be taken before 9 p.m. for Flex and before 7 p.m. for Smart Pay Anywhere and Smart Pay Touch. T's and C's apply.
Love my Toyota Corolla. I do. Love it.
The Corolla's nice and comfy. My kids love it.
Slow maintenance. Looks great. Worth every penny.
My Corolla is great. Yeah. Plenty of room for my kit. Toyota Corolla me no bod pasande. Ehi meri peli garsi. Ehi me honjilondia.
For 50 million drivers everywhere, there's one clear choice. Search Toyota Corolla to see why it's the world's favourite car. To verify, visit toyota.co.uk/Corolla data.
Ian Dale on LBC.
21 minutes past nine on LBC. We're talking about CPR. We're talking about cardiac arrests and heart attacks. Now, Lawrence is a first-time caller in Glasgow. And I think, Lawrence, you want to correct me on something.
Yeah, just when I listened in earlier to the trailer, you discussed giving CPR to people that have suffered heart attack. There is a big difference between heart attack and cardiac arrest. The main one being when you're in cardiac arrest, you're virtually dead. Heart attack you can have, you'll have pains in your chest possibly, sweating, pains in the arm. Someone with that is not in need of CPR because they are, their heart is still working. Under cardiac arrest, your heart has actually stopped completely. So you need something to bring it back, which is either with CPR or with a defibrillator to shock it back into action again.
Well, I'm really grateful that you're our first caller because I have to say I did not know that. Call me ignorant, call me what you like, but I'm glad, I'm glad you've made the differentiation because I wouldn't have done.
Yeah, it's the wide conception of it. I've suffered mine. I'm around about a 10-year survivor, which is quite good news for people that have recently suffered cardiac arrest. And I was at my probably at my fittest. I was 53 in a running group, and we were doing what you call 1 mile reps, which means you run a mile, then recover, and then run a mile, another mile. At the time, I was doing not the fittest, but for age, it was okay, which was 45-minute 10Ks, an hour 45-minute half marathons. And I was out on holiday in Tenerife the week before, which I did a training run in the heat, and no other side effects whatsoever or any reason to think it could be me that goes down next time with cardiac arrest. However, on that night when I came back, I also had no feeling of, oh, I'm not running tonight because I've got chest pain or I don't feel right or I feel ill. I was 100%. Did the second of the reps of the mile, and I don't remember, but I just collapsed with a thud on the ground, banged my head, which bounced off the concrete, pouring in blood. And luckily, the people I was with and amongst them were two cardiac nurses. And the others had said, oh dear, Lawrence has fainted. And they realised right away I had got into cardiac arrest, did what was needed, which was chest compressions. And the other thing, which was luck at the time, I was outside a doctor's house who also came out and assisted in that until they managed to have the ambulance, which took about 12 minutes. I was then shocked back into life, taken to hospital, and I had a quadruple bypass, and I now have a defibrillator inserted in my chest for which will shock me if I have another cardiac arrest or go into ventricular tachycardia or other life-affecting rhythms. And I'm still here to tell the tale. Not running anymore, but I still walk, park, run from time to time and try and do a bit of regular exercise.
See, I think a lot of people listening to you will be thinking, well, why would you be have a cardiac arrest when you're very healthy, like these footballers that have had it?
Exactly. You think Christensen go down, it was quite emotional when I saw it happening.
Yeah, I remember watching it. I was in tears.
Yeah, so these guys are at their fittest as well. I'm not an athlete or anything. I was just a fun recreational fun runner. And as I say, I was what I would class as my fittest. My weight wasn't heavy. I'm not a drinker, smoker, or bad eater. But I still don't know if they know 100% why. I think a bit of genetics come into it. And I was in hospital. I didn't come out of the coma till the day after, and I wasn't aware of. I don't remember any of it whatsoever. The falling down, no feeling unwell or no pains. And I was brought back round in hospital.
Which in many ways is a good thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I've been okay, as I say. I still do exercise. They encourage after they have what they call a cardiac rehab session after you've gone through this. So the hospital were helpful. This is not available everywhere because I'm a member of one or two Facebook groups which are very helpful. But after cardiac arrest, assistance and follow-up is not great up and down the country. Seems to be a bit of a postcode lottery for that. But my care has been second to none, and I still have follow-ups. My defibrillator signals down to through my phone. The technology is amazing. Signals through my phone to the hospital, and they can see if I've been shocked or gone into arrest or there's anything untoward happening, which will be the same as the footballers and Christensen.
Technology is an amazing thing, isn't it, in these circumstances?
Technology is amazing, including the radio and social media for bringing awareness to the requirement of defibrillators. Before this, I wouldn't have even known what a defibrillator was. I can now do CPR. I've had training in the dummy, which I would certainly push for anyone and everyone to do. I think they were bringing into schools from late primary and secondary. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I think
there was
a
Scottish government push for it. But the other thing which I'm very aware of, and I always see, in fact, I was just down in London the weekend there, and I'm very aware now when I see defibrillators, it gives me I'm pleased when I see them. They're springing up more and more outside public buildings, pubs, railway stations, bus stations, etc.
Do you know how much they cost?
I think they're around about £1,000.
Wow.
I don't quote me on it, but I think from £1,000 upwards. There's a lot of local charities that raise money in order to, have them installed. And when you do open them, they're very easy to use. It's all digital instructions with a voice that tells you where to put the pads and what have you. I have seen them. But the other thing about CPR is you can't do CPR wrong or do anything bad because the person you're doing it on is pretty much dead anyway. So you can't be much worse than that. So for anyone worrying about doing any further damage, get that out of your mind and just pump away as best you can, is what I would say.
According to St John Ambulance, defibrillators can cost anything between £800 and £2,500, depending on the model and features. But, I mean, that is an interesting thing, isn't it? Should like, pubs and restaurants almost see it as part of their corporate social responsibility to actually have one of these, or at least to help pay for one in each street? I mean, that would be a great thing to do, I guess. Lawrence, thank you. What a great call. Ulrika is another first-time caller in Battersea. Ulrika, hi. What would you like to say?
Hi, Ian. I was listening on the programme and I thought I felt compelled to call in because your last caller... A similar thing happened to me. I was 47 at the time, and I was walking London Bridge Tube Station, and I don't recall anything. And I woke up 2 days later in hospital, and they told me that I had a cardiac arrest, and 12 minutes, I was pretty much dead on the platform.
12 minutes?
Yeah.
Wow.
I had absolutely no signs of anything. Fit, slim, sporty, well, relatively sporty, and two passerbys saved my life. But the defibrillator at the tube station didn't work, they told me afterwards. And then they had to get a motorcycle ambulance.
Yeah.
Paramedic come, and I think he had a defibrillator that worked. And then they took me to, even though I was in London Bridge tube station, they took me to St. Bartholomew's Hospital. And then I woke up 48 hours later and they told me what happened. And I just couldn't believe it. I have absolutely nothing wrong with me. You know, no heart history, no nothing.
And what have you had to do since? Because if you had nothing wrong with you before, have they put you on a sort of regime of what you should do to try and prevent it happening again? Or is that not possible?
Well, my cardiologist at the time, he said, well, we can't explain why this happened to you, but they thought it was a split artery, which they call the widowmaker, and usually, I think, 3% survive. The tale is a tear in the artery, and then you get a blood clot, and that, you know, when you sort of have a wound, and then it tries to heal, and that clot then causes the heart to stop. And they don't know what happened, why it happened. Maybe stress, I don't know. I have no idea.
It's quite unsettling, though, isn't it, when you don't know?
Yeah.
They don't know.
It was unsettling, because you think, have I done something? Is it inherited? All my family was tested. You know, I'm from Austria, so obviously. You can hear I'm not from around here. So all my children, and there's nothing. And they couldn't explain it. And like your previous caller, I used to go to this hospital gym and all the health talks and everything. And when I first walked in, they said to me, you're in the wrong room. And they said, this is for the heart attack victims. And I said, yes, I'm one of those. And they just, we've never seen anybody like you here. And I said, I know, I'm sorry, but, you know, it's happened to me. And they couldn't quite believe it.
Have they never met an Austrian before?
No, but, I mean, if it happens to, and all my friends, they said, if it can happen to you, it can literally happen to anybody.
You see, I'm now thinking, sat in the studio, if I had a cardiac arrest right now, what would happen?
You'd be dead.
Well, thanks. I'm trusting Corey knows how to do CPR, or Chris knows. Well, because I'm 100 miles away now, but it is a thought, though, isn't it? Particularly when you get, I mean, you're much younger than me, and I'm thinking, well,
I don't know about that, Ian.
Well, you are. You're 15. You told me how old you were, and I know you're 15 years younger than me. So it does make you think.
Yes, I mean, it does make you really think. It makes you really appreciate where, I mean, I really appreciated where I had my cardiac arrest. Yeah. I would have been in my car at that point. And I know it sounds very strange, but 2 hours before, my routine, and I love my routine changed. And I should have been in my car, but I happened to be on the tube station.
Mm.
And it saved my life. In my car, I would be dead. I probably would have killed other people. In the office, I would have been dead. There wouldn't have been anybody helping me. And I was the luckiest person on the planet that day. I had the two passerbys. One was the, at the time, resuscitation officer of Guy's Hospital, and the other one was an intensive care nurse from King's Hospital.
Oh, you were so lucky, weren't you?
And those two saved my life.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm glad it was at London Bridge and not Charing Cross, because when I fell over and broke my hip in Charing Cross, not a single passerby stopped to help.
Oh, my God, really? Well, these two girls, I found them, and they look like angels. They are my angels. And they said they spotted me lying on the floor, and the transport police was waiting for the ambulance. And they said, this woman hasn't got a heartbeat. And they said, oh, no, she had an epileptic fit.
Oh, as if they would know.
They would. I would be dead. They would have watched me die. And those two passerby, I mean, I can't thank them enough.
Well, look, it's been an absolute privilege to talk to you, Ulrika, and indeed Lawrence from Glasgow. You couldn't wish for two better phone calls to start this phone, and we'll get more people on air in a moment. But Ulrika, thank you very much for picking up the phone. It's 9:34 on LBC, time for the news headlines with Tim Daly.
Lebanese media is reporting heavy artillery fire around border towns in the south of Lebanon this evening. Earlier, a US official said they believed an Israeli ground incursion was imminent. The UK's Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, has repeated the British government's calls for all UK citizens to leave Lebanon. He says he's also been having talks with the US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. And the UK's last remaining coal-fired power station has closed. The switch off near Nottingham concludes Britain's use of burning coal to produce energy. LBC weather staying wet and windy in the east of England overnight, but drier with clearer spells elsewhere. A low of a chilly 3 degrees.
Now, as the American election ramps up, vice presidential candidates J.D. Vance and Tim Walz prepare to go head-to-head in a TV debate. Join Nick Ferrari this Wednesday morning as he sits down with Sam Rosbottom from Betfair to discuss how the debate went and how it's affecting the betting markets. That's this Wednesday, thanks to Betfair. Play responsibly. I'm Ian Dale, this is LBC, and it is 9:35.
This is LBC.
It's 2024. We can use robots to clean our flats. Order Kung Pao Chicken with our watches. And,
hey, play my tune.
Playing your playlist.
And now there's a better way to do energy. With OVO's Energy Savings Account Beyond, you could save cash today and bank greener rewards for tomorrow. Now that's a first. Search OVO Beyond. Discounts include bill savings by using energy at greener times. Smart meter required. For terms and eligibility, search OVO Beyond.
Oh, I'm done. This is my last one. I can't eat any more dumplings. This was the best thing of my life. But I'm done. Hey, look over there. Oh, they're doing dumplings with shrimps.
Say yes to feasting on food markets. With daily flights to Asia. Lufthansa.
You have 3 new messages.
Oh, it's Dad. Quick one. Don't forget to turn the heating off before going to Grant's. Don't want you getting home to shriveled plant babies. Totally forgot why I called. Spoke to Zara from St. James's Place about Grant's care. Moving her in is the best option for peace of mind and my pocket. Don't think the grab rails will match the decor, though. Love you, bye!
While you're looking out for the ones you love, our one-to-one financial advisors are looking out for you. St. James's Place. Invaluable advice.
Curtains drawn at dawn. You wake. And so does your potential. You don't let it snooze or sit around. You act on it. Run with it. Past the safety of routine and familiarity to somewhere new. Because anything is possible if you choose to make it happen.
Whether you're growing your business, switching careers, or just starting out, make the most of your potential. It all starts with skills. Search Skills for Life.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973.
9:37. Now, we were going to talk to another Tory MP about the conference now, but we've got so many calls coming in on this, we've dumped them, I'm afraid. So, let's go to Will in Chesterfield. Hello, Will.
Hi, good to talk to you.
Hi, what would you like to say?
Talking about CPR.
Oh, it's a terrible line, Will. We'll come back to you in a while. Let's go to Samantha, who's a first-time caller in Hackney. Hi, Samantha.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Very well. What would you like to say?
So, I was just driving and I heard the radio, but I pulled over now. I just wanted to say, you know, last year on Christmas Day, we were travelling to Africa with my dad just to, you know, spend New Year's, spend Christmas there. And unfortunately, he's okay now, but whilst we were on the flight, about an hour till landing, he suffered a heart attack, which was very scary at the moment because I was just about to doze off and then I, like, woke up to his noise. And in that moment, I didn't know what to do. I had no idea what, like, how to save him or, you know, what was happening. Thankfully, you know, airport hostesses and stuff, they were trained, so they were able to kind of ease him up and when we landed, obviously doctors and stuff came. But in that moment, it was just really scary. You know, I was 24 at the time, 25 now, but it's very, very scary to go through when you don't know what to do. So this year, I was like, I don't want to be in that situation ever again, let it be a family member or a stranger. I need to know what to do. So St. John Ambulance have a course where they teach you all ages, even with a child or baby, CPR, choking, kind of like burns, just treating every kind of real life urgent situation, bleeding. And I think it's really important to take a course in just to know, because you never know what's going to come up, especially like mothers, you know, you never know when a child's going to like cut themselves. It's just important to have that. And it's important to obviously, I think defibrillators as well coming into it, it's very important to have defibrillators everywhere. You know, you can find your closest defibrillator online, just even searching a postcode, your current location, it will show you. But, you know, next to me, it's great. There's like one in every school. But what happens when the schools are closed on the weekends? Like, you know, I won't be able to go and access that. I would just have to rely on ambulance to come in time whilst I administer CPR. Or if I didn't know any CPR, just have to rely on ambulance. So I think it's just, it doesn't hurt to do an hour course to save someone's life. That's kind of my...
Trouble is, it's the sort of thing that you think, oh, I'll do that next week, and then next week comes, yeah. I'll do that next week, and then you end up not doing it. And I suspect also that there's this tendency to think, well, there'll always be someone else around to do it who knows what they're doing, so I won't learn how to do it. And that's not always going to be the case. I mean, imagine if you're out walking your dog or something, and you discover somebody in the middle of the path and there's no one else around. It is then down to you.
Yeah, and I think your fight or flight response really kicks in. You know, if there's a lot of people around, you're much more able to just be like, oh, someone else will deal with it. But in that moment when it's just you, you know, your adrenaline kicks in like crazy, and you will be able to do what you think you would be able to do in that moment, because you have to be calm. Yeah. And I think everyone is a bit scared of, oh my God, what if I press too hard and I'll crack the rib cage? But like, you need to realize that person is, you know, clinically dead. Cracking the rib cage is a later problem. You know, as long as you save that person's life and then you can deal with the rib cage later, they're breathing, they're alive.
Yeah. No, absolutely,
you
right.
Know. Samantha, so you just have to learn it.
Thank you so much. Let's go back to Will in Chesterfield. Hopefully the Chesterfield steeple is not interfering with the signal this time. Hello, Will.
Hi, Ian. It's a spire, it's not a steeple. It's a crooked spire.
Is there a difference?
Ooh, yes, there is to us. Good to talk to you.
What would you like to say?
Talking about CPR brings back memories. I was a combat medic for quite some years when I was in the army. 1992, I was on a patrol with one of my best friends, Dean Russell, and he got shot and it clipped one of the blood vessels that supplies his kidneys. And I fortunately was able to clamp the blood vessel, but he'd lost a lot of blood. So I was able, we carry fluids that will expand, but he'd lost so much blood that he went into cardiac arrest, and I had to resuscitate him for 2.5 hours. Now, any serving soldier will be able to tell you the gear that you've got to carry in a hot country, because you've got to carry your cold weather stuff for night as well. But it was 2.5 hours that I don't ever want to do again. It's, but it was a lesson that I learned, and it's something I've had to use a couple of times since. But yeah, Dean, bless him. He didn't make it.
Well, that is tragic, and we use that word a little bit too much in society nowadays. But I mean, that is a definition of a tragedy, isn't it? And presumably, I mean, it's something that you, well, conversations like this bring it all back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I do various jobs now. One of which is I work as a doorman. A door supervisor. So part of the SAA training is that you have to be, you have to have your first aid certificate. So doing the first aid certificate and my training, you know, I went home that night and a night full of nightmares, just brought it back. But it's, I mean, some great great calls, listening to some of the people talk. You know, it's such a simple thing to learn, but it will save lives. I was just in an extreme situation where I couldn't save him, but it saves lives.
Well, it can't work every time, and I think anyone that makes an effort, and my sister was in a, well, not similar situation, but she had to deliver CPR to a guy that had a cardiac arrest on a squash court, and he didn't make it, and she was absolutely bereft for a very long time afterwards, and it inevitably affects you, it stays with you, because you think, well, is there something else I could have done? And of course, generally, there isn't. You've done your best, and that's all you can do.
Well, you can have a certain level of detachment if you don't get hands-on with somebody. You can sort of, to an extent, you can shut off to it. But the minute you actually lay hands on somebody and it doesn't work, it's a very difficult one. But I'll tell you, all the people listening now, it's much harder to sort of reconcile with if you see somebody go and you've done nothing.
Yeah.
People need to learn. People need to take these courses. They're quick. They're relatively cheap. They're very, very simple, and it gives you it just arms you for situations. It's got to happen, and I'm so grateful for, you know, this being on the show tonight.
Well, look, I hope that hundreds of people listening tonight will go onto the British Heart Foundation website and go onto this Reviver course. And you can Google it. I think it's R-I-V-I-R, if I've got that wrong. I'll bring it to you before the end of the programme again. But, well, thank you very much indeed. Right, we'll come to more of your calls in a second. It's 9:46.
LBC. Right now, in communities across the UK, people like Flo are struggling.
I'm 11 years old. I'm a carer for my mum.
LBC's charity, Global's Make Some Noise, funds vital projects and offers assistance to those who need it most, including those that give young carers support and counselling.
You don't feel like you're alone as much anymore.
You can help change lives across the UK. Donate to Global's Make Some Noise and help people like Flo. Proudly supported by Furniture Village.
It's 2024. We can use robots to clean our flats. Order Kung Pao Chicken with our watches. And, hey, play my tune.
Playing your playlist.
And now there's a better way to do energy. With OVO's Energy Savings Account Beyond, you could save cash today and bank greener rewards for tomorrow. Now that's a first. Search OVO Beyond. Discounts include bill savings by using energy at greener times. Smart meter required. For terms and eligibility, search OVO Beyond.
Debbie, can I see you in my office for a second turn? I'm just recording your sick leave from Friday. I know you said you had the flu, but I'm just checking because of that voicemail you left me at 1 a.m. saying I was the worst boss ever.
With some conversations, you want the ground to open up and swallow you whole. People used to think talking about your finances was one of them. But with a My Money review at Skipton Building Society, you can get advice that helps you make more sense of your money. And it's completely free. That's one less conversation you'll need to avoid.
Let me give HR a call.
Online, over the phone, or in branch. Search Skipton Building Society to find out more.
Curtains drawn at dawn. You wake, and so does your potential. You don't let it snooze or sit around. You act on it. Run with it. Past the safety of routine and familiarity to somewhere new. Because anything is possible if you choose to make it happen.
Whether you're growing your business, switching careers, or just starting out, make the most of your potential. It all starts with skills. Search Skills for Life.
Nobody asks to have a lifetime of memories slowly erased. Nobody asks to have a loved one not recognize them. Nobody asks to feel lonely or confused. But today, you could change this. By leaving a gift in your will to Alzheimer's Society, you'll help fund life-changing support, vital campaigning, and groundbreaking research to tackle Britain's biggest killer. Discover the impact your gift can make. Search Alzheimer's Society Wills.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ian Dale. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Let me just give you that course name again. It's Reviver, R-E-V-I-V-R. Oh, sorry, R-E-V-I-V-R. Apologies for burping there. The website is reviver.bhf.org. cpr.uk. And if you go to that site, you can do the 15-minute CPR course. I would be really disappointed if fewer than, say, 5,000 of you did that over the course of the next 24 hours. Because you never know, it could be the moment that you save someone's life. And you'll think back to this hour and think, well, thank God I went onto that website. Andy's in Rochester. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
So I'm a cardiac nurse, and before I just give you a little information how to avoid maybe getting a heart attack, I just want to highlight something quickly. Restart a Heart Day, organised by the British Heart Foundation and Resuscitation Council, is on the 16th of October. Restart a Heart Day is where organisations like the one I work for, ANA Training and Consultancy in Rochester, and hospitals across the UK, first aid companies, are offering free training on how to do CPR. So that means people can drop in sessions at any Restart a Heart Day location. So search Restart a Heart Day on Google and people will be able to pop in during school hours at all different times to practice CPR.
Well, again, I think it's a great initiative and I hope people will take your advice on that.
Okay, thank you for that. The Resuscitation Council are trying to get tens of thousands of people taught on that day. But in terms of heart attack and cardiac arrest, there's 30,000 cardiac arrests in the UK per year. And cardiac arrest, most of the time, does relate to a heart attack. And a heart attack is where a thrombus is in an artery on the outside of the heart, a clot. And that's what one of the callers earlier had. That is what's called a heart attack. When you have a heart attack, it means damage to part of the heart muscle. And and when people have heart attacks, it's because they build up a plaque in the arteries. And the artery plaque builds up because of risk factors, one of which is family history. So if your parents or your grandparents were diagnosed with a heart attack, that puts you at risk of a heart attack. Other risk factors are smoking, lack of exercise, high cholesterol. Now, lots of lay people don't know their cholesterol in their bloodstream. If you walk around with a high cholesterol, then that will build plaque up in the arteries. And some people have cholesterol because it's a congenital problem, not because they eat lots of fatty food. So risk factors cause the plaque build up in an artery. If the plaque breaks, that's when a heart attack occurs and damage happens to the heart muscle. And when you're having a heart attack, lots of people think it's about chest pain, but it's about any sudden onset symptom that makes you feel really unwell. So 50% of a certain type of heart attack get indigestion, heartburn pain, but they feel like impending doom. I feel like I'm going to die. I don't feel very well. And I've got this terrible indigestion, worse than I've ever had before. I'm sweaty, I'm clammy. I don't feel well. These are symptoms like chest pain, chest tightness, chest heaviness, pain in your back that comes on suddenly and is not worse on movement. These sort of symptoms need 999 and an ambulance called with saying what the symptoms are, because 25% of people having a heart attack then collapse and the heart stops working and they go into cardiac arrest, which then requires chest compressions and a defibrillator.
Well, Andy, thank you for that. Really informative call. Let's move on to Alex, who's another first-time caller in Tring in Hertfordshire, where Graham Pole lives, I believe.
That's right. I bump into him occasionally. question a few of his dodgy decisions.
Right, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I mean, I've just been listening with interest to the programme. No, I listen to the programme most nights with interest, but specifically tonight, is it, you know, it directly relates to me. If I can go back to 2012, so, you know, going back a while, and all during that summer, I felt really, really ill, and I was going to bed, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, and wasn't waking up till the following morning. So there was something amiss. My ex-wife, Alison, she became concerned and she took me to her house and I stayed in the spare room there. And over the things worsened and she got me an appointment with the on-call doctor at Stoke Mandeville Hospital, which is a hospital, you know, local to me. And when I got there and the doctor was, you know, making his assessment, I was really, really frightened because I knew that there was something wrong and I desperately wanted him to, you know, to take me, you know, to make me an inpatient, to, you know, for me to go into the hospital and thereby I would feel a little bit, well, a lot safer. So after a few days of tests, we did all these tests, but nothing was amiss in my heart, nothing at all. We were doing lots of scans of my tummy, etc., because I was being sick a lot. After a few days of this, on the Saturday, I went into the hospital Wednesday, Thursday. Alison and my ex came up and she mentioned to me that my heart was beating fast. And I, you know, I wasn't aware of this, but you know, when she pointed it out, I was. When they left, the nurse was doing her rounds, you know, at the end of the night just to make sure everyone was settled down, etc. It was a young Irish girl, and that's the last thing I remember. And at that point, I had a cardiac arrest, and I just went out like a light. And I came to, I think it was the following day in the afternoon, and I had all this ice around me. It was freezing cold, and I was trying to explain, you know, what had happened. Obviously, they knew what had happened, but I didn't. You know, I was confused. But it was a cardiac arrest at that time, and I think I can't explain it nearly so lucidly or comprehensively as your previous caller, but there's a, you know, there's a big difference between a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. If you have a heart attack, the chances are you'll survive. And if you have a cardiac arrest, then unless you're really lucky, as I was with that nurse, the chances are you won't survive. And had she not been there, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I would have died. But there was nothing in my... What was wrong with me, I actually had endocarditis, which is a very rare condition, and that hadn't been picked up. Perhaps it could have picked up, because one of the risk groups for cardiac arrest are people who have got a leaky heart valve. And I, through a previous investigation, that was it was after a stag weekend in Amsterdam, I did feel triggered.
I don't think we need any more details of that, Alex.
No, I'm not going to. that's when they picked up that I had a leaky heart valve. So maybe they, you know, so perhaps it could have been picked up, but that's what caused it. And you know, with a heart attack, what you have is it's your arteries are blocked. It interrupts the blood supply to your heart. Whereas with a cardiac arrest, as I understand it, it's an electrical failure in the heart. But I was lucky, and then my luck continued because I was in the hands of Professor. If I can give him a shout out, Professor Stephen Westerby, who's the heart surgeon at Oxford. And he replaced my dicky heart valve. So I now have a mechanical
heart valve. Well, listen, Alex, we're going to have to stop now because we've reached the end of the hour. But thank you so much indeed for your call. And thanks to all of you for all of your calls in this hour. I think they've been quite extraordinary. Now, I'll be back tomorrow from 7, and I'll be joined on the panel for Cross Question by the former Conservative Middle East Minister, Alastair Burt, and by the journalist and author, Rachel Shabby. If you've missed any of this evening's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player, where you can also pause and rewind live radio, as well as listen to a range of podcasts. Download now for free from your app store or head to globalplayer.com. And of course, a new edition of For the Many will be out just, well, in a few minutes' time, actually, with Gillian Keegan. Coming up at 1 on LBC, it's Richard Spur. But right now, here's Ben Kentish.
Ian, thank you very much indeed. Hello, evening, coming up.
The best way forward is an immediate ceasefire and to get back to a political solution.
Israeli tanks massed just south of the Lebanese border with an invasion tonight said to be imminent. It follows another day of aerial attacks on Hezbollah targets. And back here, UK leaders like David Lammy, who you just heard, demand an immediate ceasefire. But frankly, they may as well be shouting into the wind, because this is an escalation that they have been warning Israel against for months. And yet, you might ask, what choice does that country have? Can it really afford to leave Hezbollah in place, firing missile after missile at its civilians? Or is this not just a just war, but arguably a necessary one?
On your radio, on Global Player, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Lebanese media is reporting heavy artillery fire near towns along its southern border with Israel. It's after Benjamin Netanyahu's defense minister said the next stage in the war against Hezbollah will begin soon. Richard Pater is the director of BICOM, which produces research and analysis about Israel and the Middle East. He's been telling LBC we're probably looking at a limited incursion.
I think the focus will be primarily on the underground facilities that are in the villages kind of adjacent to the Israeli borders, villages that Hezbollah have turned into strongholds of military positions. And to be able to guarantee Israeli population safe return to the north, then these facilities, these military infrastructure, need to be dealt with.
Israel's military has issued evacuation orders for several areas in the south of Beirut, but a spokesperson has failed to confirm or deny any incursion into Lebanon. The Lebanese economy and trade minister, Hamin Salam, says his country is still focusing on diplomatic efforts to avoid an all-out war.
Once there's a ground war invasion, we are mostly fearful that there will be a clash, and that clash might lead to further escalation, further bombing. So that is where we are putting all our efforts now. However, things seem to be a little out of control on the border.
An independent report into a second potential IT scandal at the post office has found its likely different software caused accounting shortfalls. It concerns an older system which operated before the Horizon program was introduced. LBC's David Dom reports.
Capture, it's known as, was rolled out across branches in 1993. At least 40 sub-postmasters claim they were falsely accused of stealing because of glitches in this particular technology.